Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Josh Norris. We have a Power Pack Prospect podcast for you this week because at baseballamerica.com now, we have a new top 100. We have a full revamp. That doesn't mean that there may not be a player who stayed at the same spot as they were before, but this is not a little tweak. This is not removing graduated players or anything like that. This is a full, we did the reporting. We looked at every spot from 1 to 100 based on where we started with where they were. But Jeff, we not just started with where they were, but I feel like we ended up with a whole lot of movement for a early May update.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. But I also think that dating back to some of the graduations last year, it kind of felt like we had a top 100 that wasn't necessarily fully formed yet. Like there were players at the back end that I think we all had suspicions on, or players, you know, outside the top 25 that we all had suspicions that were going to make big jumps. And I felt like a lot of the reporting, frankly, the performance, and then, you know, any advanced data that we get access to was kind of backing a lot of the moves. So I think it was kind of the logical progression of this. And, you know, I think if you go back to some of the articles that we had written kind of in the preseason about who could be in the, you know, contention for number one in 2026, a lot of those names that came up even as like dark horses and stuff like that in the course of those conversations and, you know, in the stuff that was published, I think are a lot of the guys that have been big movers and kind of the next phase of the list.
Josh, the other thing that jumped out to me with this, top 100, we always have 100, but not every 100's the same. This one's one that at the top of it, I came away kind of had a smile on my face when we were done. I really kind of am excited about kind of the state of prospectum right now, especially in the number of young shortstops we have in the game.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The top 10, 15 are really good players. To put it bluntly, and you would think so based on their placing, but a lot of these guys have the potential to be extraordinary players. These are the kind of players that you would pay to see in the minor leagues and would continue to pay to see once they get to the big leagues. It's a really fun time to watch a lot of low A baseball and a lot of big league and triple A pitching and one hitter, you know, is a new, we'll talk about that in a second, but yeah, it's a really interesting group at the top and a little muddied at the bottom, but I can't remember a year where it wasn't a little muddy at the bottom. If it wasn't, we wouldn't do this.
It always should be muddier at the bottom than it is at the top, because the top is really where you're going to get a lot more consensus, right? When you get to the back of this list, we try to get as much feedback as we can, but at the same time, some of that feedback, which I think frustrates Josh especially sometimes, as he said, is some of that feedback will be one feedback. Move this guy up. Next feedback. Why is that guy on the 100? Okay, well, how are we going to figure that out? That happens, you know. So, but we also, I would say importantly, we have a new number one. We have a new number one, which is also the old number one, because he was our number one going into the offseason last year. Roman Anthony, if you're reading the scroll, I think you may be ahead of us here, that Roman Anthony is our new number one prospect on the top 100. Josh, like I feel like that this was a useful debate, but at the same time, how easy was it to you? Like, you know, was it something where Anthony moved up to you? Was it something where Roki moved down? How did you kind of perceive it?
Truth be told, if I had the ballot, I would have voted neither one of these gentlemen number one overall. But I think it's a case of both things. You know, Roki's been okay in the big leagues. I don't think he's anywhere near lived up to the hype so far. But I don't think he could either, given the hype that surrounded him. Whereas Roman Anthony, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, is doing exactly the same thing as he did in AAA last year. And it seems like there's a good chance he'll be in the big leagues in short order. And I don't see any reason to believe that he will have much of a big time adjustment period once he gets there. It's easy to forget he's still super young. And in the interest of precision, super young is 20 years old for a few more days. So he'll be 21, the same age as, you know, whenever the draft happens, the college guys coming in. He's in AAA and on the cusp of the big leagues. This is still an incredibly young ball player who's producing really well at the highest level of the minor leagues.
I would say, Jeff, we talked about this, that we didn't want to basically say, okay, Roki stays number one just because he was our number one. At the same time, we also didn't want to say, oh, he's moving to number two. We're completely off of Roki Sasaki. You know, I mean, I know he's going to graduate at some point, but, well, clearly he's not what we thought he was either. How did you kind of balance it, like as far as the top couple?
Yeah, I think when you sort of look at it, we didn't have a true North American sample, like a affiliated American sample with Roki, and we got one. We had kind of confusing TrackMan data year over year from Japan. I wrote about it a little bit in the off season. And I think some of our worst fears just in regards to the quality of the fastball and some of the additional traits have like kind of come true. The command hasn't been great. Just hasn't been as polished as, say, you know, some of the other, we'll say older Japanese professionals that have come over. But I'd even say like Shohei Ohtani as a pitcher kind of initially even. Not quite that polished, but I think you do see the stuff. He's a huge prospect, still a player that I think long-term projects as, you know, potentially a number two type of starter. But there are some tweaks and there's going to be some bumps in the road. And, you know, I think even lately, like the last start was a little bit better. You know, he could be turning a corner and just kind of getting adjusted. But on the other side of the coin, I think, you know, we've seen what Roman Anthony has done for 2 years now. Some of the questions in the profile, maybe regarding the angles and that sort of stuff, has gotten even better. All he's done is produce. And I think in, you know, a majority of the other organizations in baseball, he might even have been somebody who broke camp as a 20-year-old. He's really feels like a, when you see him, like a big leaguer in a AAA lineup right now. And I think that's kind of the best way to put it. And I think you look at the player overall, really productive, you know, gets on base. The contact hasn't been a question really at any point in his professional career, though that was kind of an amateur question. And he's hit for power just consistently, and it's huge EVs, and has had some moments as well. So, yeah, I just sort of think when you break it down, there's nothing that's sort of we kind of looked at it as a 1A, 1B situation in the offseason. And I think it still sort of is in some cases. It's just the safety of the hitter and, you know, just having a truer sample on Roki, I think, just gave us a clearer vision of how these two shook out.
I do think it's kind of interesting, Jeff, that, you know, we said 1A, 1B, but if I remember correctly, we all chose Roki as 1A. Am I wrong?
Yeah. And I don't think you are. Maybe I think Carlos had Dylan Cruz actually, but
that makes sense.
But outside of that, yeah, I think we all did have Roki. And I think to me, and I can't speak for JJ, but I think there was like some, well, he kind of had a weird year last year. He was hurt, wanted to come over here. It's the Dodgers. Let's see sort of what we get. And I just expected the fastball quality and shape just to be a little bit better. That's all fixable stuff, I think, long term. But, you know, it was some of the questions, I'll say, from the more negative feedback we might have gotten or heard around the industry on Roki. That he is, you know, and he is more of a project, and we kind of said that to begin with. But not moving down tremendously. He's moving to number two.
Yeah, so. One spot. I mean, it's a slide.
So the other thing that does jump out is most, pretty much everyone, this is not shocking for us, but everyone in our top five is either in the big leagues or very much knocking on the door in AAA. And that includes a new number two pitching prospect in the game, which We already had Bubba Chandler coming in the year, I believe, you know, very high. But he's moved up again. And Jeff, I feel like I think we've talked about him before on the podcast, that it does feel like he's unlocked another gear this year. He was really good. He's now even better.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we got feedback that was kind of in line with that as well. The fastball is even better. The secondary stuff has been, you know, at least looked like it's been better quality. It's been thrown a little bit harder. And, you know, he's landing, you know, all four of his pitches for strikes, which I think is a big part of it as well. He's another guy that just looks ready for prime time in AAA. It's like every time he goes out there, it's like, how many whiffs is he going to generate? You know, how many guys is he going to strike out? You know, is it going to, like, what's the, you know, the number of base runners he's going to allow between like 2 and 5, like pick a number, you know, it's sort of along those lines. It's just dominant stuff. And yeah, he does look ready to start in the big leagues like tomorrow.
Last start, 16 whiffs, 16 swings and misses on his four-seam fastball, which is a pretty absurd number. Last I checked, I believe it's over a 40% swing and miss rate on his fastball. That's not a number that you see in pro baseball now, but he obviously, there's movement to it, but it's also velocity too. It's 98, it's 99, it's been 100, 101 when he needs it. But Josh, it is rough to be a Pirates fan. It's been rough to be a Pirates fan for a long time. But the idea of Paul Skeens and Bubba Chandler at the front of a rotation, that feels to me like that could be, before very long, the best pairing, front pairing, and the, you know, pairing at the front of a rotation in the majors. Am I crazy?
I mean, in general, yes, but I don't think you're wrong here. I think there's also Jared Jones in the mix. Once he comes back, he makes a nice
when healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, when healthy. I mean, that's true for everyone. But in a perverse way, I think it almost makes it more painful because they have to develop a hitter to get these guys some run support. Otherwise, it's just going to be a tease. And I really hate to say that, because you should be rewarded for churning out, you know, these guys. I mean, we talk about Skeens, and some people will say, you know, you don't get credit for Skeens. He was 1-1. Well, first of all, you can whiff on 1-1 picks. You have to get the right guy, and they got the right guy. Second, there were all sorts of questions about his fastball quality and yada, yada, yada coming out of the draft. Well, they went and added a splinker. So that was... They had the foresight to do that too. And it seems to have worked out real nicely for them. You know, and they took guys like, you know, Jones and Chandler, who are premium athletes, and got them working on the mound. Again, when healthy, Jones is pretty nasty too. So it's a nice front three. Just go get some run support, fellas. That's easier said than done, I suppose.
I would also say, like, they deserve a lot of credit, you know, again, on Bubba. Now we can have still questions about the Pirates hitting development, but with Bubba, he was a premium prospect. He was a big money signing a few years ago now, technically. But at the same time, Jeff, this was not the Bubba Chandler we see today is significantly better than the Bubba Chandler who walked into pro ball, which should be expected with a multi-sport two-way guy who played a lot of shortstop and also played foot. You know, like, this is something where he had multiple options for where this could go, but his development as a pitcher is really impressive.
Yeah. You know, I think if you just look at, you know, where he was 2 years ago, even to this point, the fastball velocities climbed a bit, the release traits got better. And you sort of talked about it, and, you know, when I break down fastballs and kind of look at it, I always sort of break it down into like three different boxes, and you got to check at least two of them to have a pretty good fastball. And like, one is straightforward, it's velocity. The second, kind of straightforward, it's movement. And the third is like release traits, which I think sometimes can, you know, be why we have these guys who are 91 and 93 that are super deceptive, you know, like a Joe Ryan or someone like that. And Bubba Chandler is one of the rare guys who's a starter who checks all three of those boxes. And I think that's what makes him unique, is he has like that quality of fastball and does have good enough secondaries and the ability to throw enough strikes and, you know, just sequence and miss bats consistently and keep hitters off balance a couple times through the order that you just kind of don't see. So, you know, I think they do deserve some credit just in terms of developing that in whatever way, shape, or form that they have. I know that internally, you know, the pitching stuff for them is definitely pretty advanced, and they're in on some things that some other teams aren't. Just knowing, you know, talking to some people in that front office. So that is definitely an area where the front office deserves quite a bit of credit, is on pitching development. And it's why we've seen as many successful arms, it seems, come out of that program as we have over the last, whatever, 3 to 4 years. So be exciting to see where it goes from here. And as Josh said, developing some hitters is kind of key. Maybe Connor Griffin can change that. Certainly O'Neill Cruz is kind of changing that narrative so far this season. As long as he stays healthy, he's been pretty good to start. So we'll see where it goes. I think it's just a matter of the Pirates investing and just like getting some maybe veteran players that they can get in trades, etc., that can fill some gaps and just give them maybe like average to above average performance on the field. Like it might be as simple as that. If they're looking to win 84, 85 games, like I think it could happen pretty easily.
We're not going to be able to cover everything. If you are expecting tonight that we're going to go through all 100 players, I'm sorry, not happening. We're not going to be able to cover everything this week. We will do another Top 100 Prospects podcast next week, covering some other topics here. But we do want to hit on some of the guys who've made big jumps. And I would say that there are several hitters who made big leaps. I'll kind of go, Josh, I'll start with you on Jack Caglione, Royals first baseman, was one of the most productive power hitters in college baseball at Florida last several years. Gone to AA Northwest Arkansas, and boom, it has not taken him long to make an impact there. What, though, beyond that, what, like when we get the feedback and all, what has stood out about Jack?
I mean, it's pretty simple. He's making a lot of contact. Like, there was zero question about the man's raw power and the man's ability to put baseballs into some semblance of orbit. The question was, he could hit it. I mean, he could hit it far. The question was, could he hit it often? And it seems like he's doing that to a very acceptable degree in AA. And I'll be frank, I had those questions. I saw him in the fall league last year, and I strongly doubted whether he'd ever be more than a guy who hits 190, 200 with 20 bombs. You could slip just about anything with a wrinkle by him. And he seems to have made some changes in the offseason, and it's working out in AA, which is, you know, probably the biggest test in the minor leagues usually, although AAA is a pretty good tester these days too. So, I mean, it's not rocket science, I don't think. He's just hitting the ball more often, and when you have that kind of brute strength, good things tend to happen when you touch the ball.
Jeff, I like how you've put it also, though, that basically we obviously know he has the power, but there's kind of the hope here, and we're kind of buying into that hope more and more when you look at the top 100 and how we're moving him up. The hope here is that he's got kind of some unusual hitter traits as well.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the consistent ability to make extremely hard contact at a variety of different angles. And, you know, he has quite a bit of bat to ball skill. He's always had that. It was more him just kind of swinging himself.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed-sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Elf into outs. And I think sometimes that was because when he does make contact, he does damage. Like, you know, just even watching, you know, his game today, you know, had a ball that he kind of mishit for a line drive, kind of low liner home run. And then, you know, another one that he kind of mishit on the ground at, I think, like 110, 111, that just was, you know, it just was a screecher. It just went, it was moving way too fast, you know, for the shortstop or the third baseman to make a play over there. So, like, I think he has enough contact and just this outlier sort of power that even moderate swing decisions, I think, sort of make a big difference overall.
So we also have Moises Ballesteros making a jump. I would say that at this point, there are still questions about his defense, how much he's going to catch in the big leagues. But going to you first this time, Jeff, I feel like that we're about as comfortable about Moises Ballesteros' bat as there is pretty much for any hitter in the minor leagues at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the feedback that I had gotten, particularly internally, was bullish on Ballesteros' bat, you know, how young he was and still really productive over a pretty large sample size of 68 games last year. In AAA, you know, the catching, as we know, was going to need some work. He's been primarily a catcher. He's had like one game at first base and then gotten some games at DH. But, you know, there's no arguing with the hit tool. A week or so ago, he was hitting 400, still hitting 381 as one of the youngest players in AAA, you know, still at 21 years old. He's showing some power as well. You know, it's never going to be sort of 30 home run power, but I do think you could get a pretty high batting average, you know, with 20 home run pop and, you know, low strikeouts and enough walks and just consistent quality at bats. He's almost like a better version, at least if he can catch at least and does have some defensive value. It's, you know, Arias sort of esque with maybe a little bit more pop because he's a bigger guy. But he sort of has that outlier barrel control and ability to make contact with a variety of pitches and just adjust even when he's sort of fooled that we see with the best hitters. So as young as he is, as productive as he's been, it's kind of hard to argue, even with the catching stuff. I think the other thing that we've consistently seen, and this is something I think we spoke about a few weeks ago on another podcast, you know, about catcher defense, how a lot of it is learned at the major league level. These guys can consistently get a little bit better. I'm not saying that I think Ballesteros is a prime candidate for that, but I do think he's going to get some opportunities to catch at the big league level because of his bat. And he has enough ability behind the plate that he's not going to totally embarrass the Cubs, et cetera.
Josh, what do you think about his ability to catch? How confident are you that he's going to be a big league catcher, or are you confident he's going to be a big league hitter?
Well, I'll just read from an article we wrote 3 years ago, which said, Ballesteros is an extremely powerful hitter with a loose, easy swing that allows him to flick line drives to all sectors of the ballpark. That was 2022. That was the Arizona Complex League. Sometimes we get these things right. You know, he's been a hitter since day one, and I do think that part of the reason there were so many doubters was because, let's be straight, he's fat. And I do think there's a lot of undue skepticism toward bigger-bodied players in the game sometimes. He's been hitting from the ACL on up at every level. He's proved it over and over and over again. I think he's going to be a really productive big league hitter, and I do think, and you know, there are questions about whether he'll catch, but evaluators last year in the AFL, were not completely out on him. You know, he showed better. Is he ever going to be Yadier Molina? No, but is he going to be serviceable? Possibly, and that will only, you know, raise his stock a little bit. But I think wherever he winds up on the diamond, he's going to be a valuable hitter.
So we're not going to be all sunshine and rainbows and you know, happy fun day and all that. We're also going to talk about, because guys do fall, and we had, I believe we had 12 players drop off the top 100 in this update. Like I said, this is a significant update. Number of players on, number of players off, whole lot of players who moved up, down, around. But we're not going to highlight every player who dropped off. But Josh, there a couple that did. One that did that jumps out is I don't think that with Starlin Cava with the Marlins that there's any question yet. There remains really no questions about the glove. We just talked about with Moises Ballesteros that he's about as comfortable as we are about any hitter in the minor leagues. I would say that the reason that Starlin Cava dropped off is there are probably more questions about his bat than there was about almost anybody in the top 100 coming into this update. Is that fair?
Yes. I think you are describing in Ballesteros and Cava, two of the most disparate players, both in skill set and stature, that you can get this side of Aaron Judge and Jose Altuve. But, you know, he's a shortstop. He's a big league shortstop right now. If you want to plug him in there, he will make some highlight plays for you. He will, however, probably not get a hit. He was, and I'll be even here. I just, you know, tooted our own horn with the 2022 ACL list. Well, Cava was number one on the FCL list last year on the strength of that defense, and he did produce in that level. But there were questions that scouts had and I had personally, which was he didn't swing the bat a whole lot. Like, I think it was like sixth or eighth lowest among all qualified hitters. He never swung the bat. And that was part of the reason why his, you know, he was able to control the zone so much, is because complex league pitchers, by and large, stink. And
they don't know how to control the zone themselves. No,
and you or I or anybody could stand up there and probably walk out of every 10 plate appearances. But the question was, did he have actual zone control or was he just patient? He gets to the Florida State League and gets traded. And it turns out it might have been just that he was taking advantage of really bad pitchers. And now that they're, you know, bumped up a couple, at least one grade, we're not talking about a world of Jacob DeGroms in the Florida State League either. He's getting exposed a little bit. There was never a thought that he was going to have huge power, but you thought he'd make a lot of contact more contact, and be toward the top of a lineup. Now it looks like he might be at the bottom of a lineup when he gets there, because I still do think his glove is going to get there. Although there are examples of supremely gifted defenders at shortstop who don't get there. But we'll see. I mean, I still think I'm confident in saying it's an 80 glove at shortstop. It's just right now it's like a 20 bat.
And Jeff, with Kevin Alcantara, we're talking about a guy who still pretty young, but it does feel like in his case, the concern has been why he drops off could largely be summarized as he's back for another year in AAA, and we're not seeing a step. We're kind of hoping to see a step forward, and we're not seeing a step forward. When we talk to scouts, when we talk to, you know, evaluators, they're not seeing a step forward with him yet.
Yeah, and I think you know, that's been a concern at points with Alcantara, because he is super streaky and will go through these periods where things are kind of down. I mean, he does hit the ball extremely hard. He runs really well. He's super toolsy. He's good in center field. You know, I don't think he's far from a top 100 prospect, to sort of put it that way. But, you know, I do think that he's another guy that will swing himself into outs sometimes. There is some swing and miss in zone. You know, it's not always optimal angles. It's a lot of ground balls. And it's just the sum of his parts right now kind of isn't meeting what the talent level is. So, you know, I think he's a guy that could get hot and kind of pop back on. He's kind of been on and off the top 100 list for a few years, but he's never really had that super loud sort of breakout season where everything has come together. I think, you know, maybe the closest we've seen to that was probably like 2023.
He's kind of blocked a little bit too, though, isn't he? Like PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong's development as what looks like a long-term fixture in center field. You mentioned he's a good center fielder. I know that they have Ian Happ. I know they have Kyle Tucker. Like they're not, the corners are pretty set right now too. But if he's not a center fielder for the Cubs, him in a corner is not as interesting as him in center. This could be long-term kind of a trade candidate, I feel, in some ways too.
Well, I'll just note here that they have Kyle Tucker for 1 year, maybe. Well,
right, but he's a corner. I don't want, if I'm saying if he's in a corner, I don't think he's as valuable as he is if they didn't have a center fielder like Pete Crow Armstrong.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I've kind of felt like him and Owen Casey were both sort of prime trade candidates over the last couple of years, just because they have been so close to the show. They're ready made. They're the kind of players that, you know, for a non-competitive club that has, you know, a good big league regular to trade, they're kind of ideal candidates that are plug and play. So, you know, I think, you know, both Alcantara and Casey are both kind of blocked. And, you know, at this point, if the organization truly believed that they were everyday regulars, I think they might already be up with the big league club. Of course, they have Ian Happ, who's kind of been, you know, at this point, like a go-to veteran on that team. I think maybe has played the most games as a Cub among the current Cubs, if I'm not mistaken. Tucker, obviously, with that big trade. And then if they can re-sign him, you know, that locks it up for a long time. And then PCA, who's one of the surging, you know, developing potential superstars right now, just in terms of his production. And then obviously, you know, what he's done since he stepped on a field as a professional in center field, just been, you know, outrageous there. Just, you know, incredible, you know, 80 grade sort of defense in center.
And say a Suzuki is the DH who can play a corner, you know, if someone needs a night off too. So that these are good problems. These are Dodgers like problems.
PCA, just to go on a small tangent here, like this was a guy in his draft year that was talked about entering the season as a 1-1 candidate. And, you know, it's not been an instant development, but it's just another bulletin on the bulletin board. Prospect development is not linear. There are very, very few examples of what I've called mutants who get there and immediately succeed. Sometimes it takes a while. So I think PCA is a great example of just being patient and reaping the rewards.
We also have, I believe, I think it may be 12, I'll count it while we're doing this, but additions to the top 100, which again is a lot. But we're not going to hit on every one of those, but we have a couple that we did want to talk about. And Jeff, one of them is, you know, kind of welcome back to Robbie Snelling. The best way I could describe it is this looks like what Robbie, like if you said that this was the start of the 2024 season, and if you did that, you would be like, wait a second, why is he a Marlin? He was a Padre, but you know, okay, there was a trade that happened in 24, but this seems like a natural progression from where he was in 23 when he's our minor league baseball pitcher of the year. There was a little bit of a pretty big speed bump in 24, but here he is, and it looks like he's kind of back, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the sequencing has been better. The stuff has been back to where it was a couple of years ago. I think some of that is kind of evidenced in how many more ground balls he seems to be driving. Like he went toe-to-toe with Noah Schultz last week, you know, in a Southern League tilt. And, you know, it was good velo because they do have that on the Birmingham broadcast. And, you know, the slider was back generating enough whiffs. It's not like a crazy whiff pitch, but when it does make, you do make contact with that pitch, he gets a lot of ground balls with it, was using it a little bit more, kind of exposing his fastball, I think, a little bit less because of that. But overall, has looked, you know, really good here and in 2025. And I think there's been, you know, some differences just in terms of, you know, what the Marlins have done with him year over year. And I actually think, you know, he's got the highest swinging strike rate at this point that he's had at any level, at any point over the last, well, 2+3 years. So kind of interesting to see. The Marlins have done a good job of developing a lot of arms over the last couple of years. It's one thing they probably, through like four different front offices, they still do seem to churn out some pitching prospects. So Snelling's back on, and you know, this was our minor league pitcher of the year 2 years ago. So you know, it's not as if he's without pedigree. It's just kind of good to see that he's back, and there's been some development of, you know, the changeup as well, which was kind of a very fringy to below average pitch previously. So all sort of good things, and I think he's trending up for sure.
And Josh, in Zebulon, not too far from us, normally if you had a player of Luis Peña's ability, of his youth, he would be the absolute star attraction of a team. And he's still really good, and he's added to the top 100. He does happen to be on the same team playing in the middle infield with Jesus Mate. But Luis Peña, in his own right, is a really fascinating prospect. What jumped out for him, and what helped lead him to jump onto the top 100?
Multiple evaluators suggesting he should go on there. We should note here that, you know, a lot of this is fueled by feedback from the industry. Like, this isn't just where we're 7 or 8 of us on a call yelling at each other for 2 hours. It's emails to pro scouts and pro directors and saying, hey, what do you guys think of this list? And saying, we should go on, off, up, down, whatever. And Luis Peña's name came up. It's not like he's out of nowhere either. You know, he was number 4 on my DSL top 31 last year. And I note in here, he hit .393 in the DSL last year, which was the best batting average in the league since 2019. So it's not like he's some pop-up guy. And it's no surprise that he joined Jesus Mate in Zebulon this year, because that is what the Brewers do. They will skip you over the Arizona Complex League if you are talented. Talk to Jackson Chourio about that. Talk to Luis Lara. Talk to Yoferi Rodriguez. Talk to these guys. They all avoided the Complex League by and large. He can hit. He can hit for power. He can run. He's got 16 stolen bases already, which is impressive on its own. But it's even more impressive considering he's missed a little bit of time this year with various dinks and bruises and scratches. But yeah, it's a really talented infield in Zebulon. He's part of it, and it's kind of a joy of a club to watch. I'm lucky it's 35 minutes from where I live.
It is a joy to do this top 100. We did have a 2-hour call, which followed on the heels of a lot of getting feedback, a lot of, you know.
It was arduous sending those emails.
Yes. So a lot of work, but we're really excited about the work because this is what we love to do. I mean, again, there are a few things that I could enjoy more than sitting around thinking about which prospect, how do I line up Bubba Chandler versus Jackson Jobe? How do I line up the young shortstops, all these things that we get to do. And we thank our Baseball America subscribers because you all are what allows us to do it. If you're watching this, you've gotten this far and you haven't gone to baseballamerica.com to check out the new top 100 and to check out all the content we're putting around it. Josh has a piece explaining some guys who didn't make the 100 yet, but are right there knocking on the door.
Who were voted on by directors. That's the key. Like the guys who were suggested, but we just didn't make it this time. So it's not just guys we talked about. It's guys that the industry suggested and might get there soon. Want to make
that. But so Josh has that he wrote. We're breaking down all the movement. So if you wonder who moved up, who moved down, who moved on, who moved off, who graduated, all of that, we have that all explained in a piece. Jeff and Josh are working on a piece for next week that will kind of be a follow-up that'll be really good. I won't go any further than that. We'll be talking about that on next week's Prospect Podcast. Same time, same place. Roughly same time, roughly same place. But we'll be doing that next week as well. And for Jeff, for Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.